The following lecture was delivered at the 18th Annual National Jewish Retreat in Miami, Florida, a project of the Rohr Jewish Learning Institute. We hope you enjoy it. We encourage you to visit jretreat.com for information on upcoming retreats. Rabbi Moshe Krasniansky will now present his lecture, Seven Pillars of Success. It's in your reach.
There are many, many elements to be a better, more successful person, to feel satisfied with your progress, to feel wholesome, much more than seven. Actually, during these months of the summer, we study Pirkei Avot, Ethics of Our Fathers, and it's replete with incredible amount of advice and ideas, attitudes that one should have to be able to be successful. What I chose here today as the seven pillars of success are certain attitudes and characteristics that are not just important to have, but they're game changers. They punch above their weight. It's something you can bring into your life, or an attitude that you acquire, characteristic that you work on, that the results are much greater, exponentially greater than the efforts, and it's really life-changing. And something unique that we get from the wisdom of Torah, the true wisdom of life. So each one of the things we'll talk about really deserve on its own hours. And I definitely encourage you all to go back home and find out more about each one of them. But here we'll just touch upon a little bit at least to try to get a picture of why, what it is and why it is that it's something that's very important and special. So, challenge. One of the things that we all face are challenges. Everyone has challenges. You know, sometimes we think the other people, things are so smooth and easy and everything looks perfect. But we all know the truth for ourselves, and the truth is for everyone, that we all face various types of challenges in our life. Sometimes they are very serious challenges or obstacles in our path. Sometimes they're less. But there's constantly challenges. There's no smooth sailing. Life is just full of it. This is what it is. And often, these challenges create a tremendous amount of anxiety, which our society, unfortunately, suffers more than ever from anxiety. Stress levels, they weigh heavily on us. It almost makes us freeze. By many people, it just makes them freeze, and it doesn't allow them to operate and to work, to move forward. So today we want to talk about what is our attitude that we're supposed to have to a challenge. And that is that challenge is an opportunity. What does that mean? In reality, challenges, though we don't ask for them, but this is the way Hashem designed the world, they're actually our friends. Because challenges bring out, or has the ability to bring out, the best within you. All the great abilities, talents, skills, courage, all many, many other things that you have lying dormant inside of you, without a challenge. But once you're challenged, these things come out. You know, they did a film about a family in Montreal, where I'm from, who hid during the war in a cave in Ukraine. National Geographic did a film because they somehow found this cave, And it was full of Hebrew writing. So anyway, they did research and they found out it's a family that survived the Holocaust and they all live in Montreal. And what was most fascinating amongst the many things that happened, how they survived for a year and a half in a cave, is that the entrance to the cave, a normal human being has a very hard time getting through the entrance to the cave. And this family are, they eat a lot of cholent and the other things. They're not skinny, and yet they were going in and out all the time. When they came back for the film, many of them couldn't get in anymore. You know, so when you have a challenge, all of a sudden things happen in your life. You're able to do things that you never imagined. For survival, the challenge was, could we survive or not? They somehow made a way. It worked for them to get in and survive. So challenges, in reality, bring out the best in us if we approach it correctly. Now, just to give you a little background, let's look at the first Jew, Avram Avinu, Abraham. So imagine a world where everyone was worshiping idols. God was non-existent. Nobody believed in God. Everyone was worshiping, whether it was Nimrod or other idols. Idol worship was rampant. And here's this little boy, Avraham, who somehow thinks something is very wrong with idol worship, is searching for the truth, and finally comes to recognize that whatever is out there that's so vast and so incredible, there must be a master to it all. And he figured out there must be a God in this world. And God appeared to Abraham. And then we find something fascinating. That all of a sudden, for the next many years of his life, God starts testing Abraham, giving him one challenge after another. And we read about it. Abraham had 10 very serious challenges in his life. Challenges to his life itself. He was supposed to be thrown in the furnace. Until the final challenge of being asked to sacrifice his only son that him and Sarah had at their old age, Isaac. Meaning that his entire dream of the future would be buried at the moment he kills his son, and everything he worked for will be for naught. Thank God Abraham passed those tests, and that's why we're here today. But the question is, I mean, is this a fair, kind God? Here you have finally someone who champions that there's a God in this world. God finds one person who recognizes that he exists, put Abraham on a silver platter, show to the world what happens when someone recognizes the truth. Take care of him, make him the richest, make him the most powerful. Let everyone see that it's worth it to find the truth. But that's not what God does. He starts testing and challenging Abraham. Why? Not because he didn't trust Abraham, and not because God's playing games. Because God saw that finally I have someone who recognizes the truth. I want to make sure that this is going to be deeply ingrained in him. I want to make sure that he will hold up this truth even when things are difficult, and especially because he's going to pass on this faith to his children. Will his children be able to withstand a Holocaust and still believe in me? Will they be able to withstand, we just experienced the destruction of both temples and still continue to live as Jews? How do we know that there will be a lot of strength behind his faith? So God started to test Abraham to strengthen his faith, to make it deep, to make it unbreakable. And every test that he passed, he became a stronger believer. He became a stronger person. God's tests is what made Abraham who he really was. He started the path, but God's tests, his challenges that he gave him, made him the great person and the father of the Jewish people. And actually, in Hebrew, the word nisayon, which are tests, is similar to the word nes, which is to raise high. Every test that Abraham faced raised him a bit higher, brought out his deep strengths and abilities. The Talmud tells us, Eina Kadosh Baruch Hu ba b'trunyan b'yosef. God does not play games. He doesn't play Russian roulette. He doesn't just throw things out and say, let's see, let's have some fun. Let's see how this person's going to dodge this next bullet. Everything God does and every challenge he gives to us is for our betterment, is to help us grow as a person, is to help us become a better me, to help us to become a stronger version of who I am. There was a businessman from England, Mr. Rader, Bensian Rader, who was very close to the Rebbe, actually did many great things for the Rebbe in the early years, the 60s and the 70s, to help build Chabad outreach. And he once came to an audience with the Rebbe, and he was complaining about a tremendous amount of business difficulties that he had. And he was really complaining, and it was like weighing on him, and like he was lost. He felt like he was losing the battle. So the Rebbe told him, Mr. Rader, there are two words for faith in Judaism. There's emunah, and the other word is, bitachon. Emunah bitachon. Many people today are reading Shara Bitachon. It's an incredible book to read. A sefer about what it means to have trust in Hashem. So he says, what's the difference between faith and trust? And the Rebbe said like this. When you have faith, you believe that you will overcome your challenge. You feel the weight of it. It weighs you down. It's a struggle. But you feel you will overcome. That's faith in God, that eventually you'll make it through. Trust is that you don't look at it as a problem at all. It's not a problem. It's just a challenge that God puts in my way to help me become stronger. You never look at it as a problem. There's no negative to it. It's hard. You have to dig deep to face it, but it's never a problem. And actually, in a letter, I tried to find it before the class, something I saw a long time ago, so I couldn't find it to read exactly how the Rebbe writes it, but there was a letter similarly sent to someone who was complaining about many things going on in their life, and the Rebbe said there are three types of people. There are those who, when they have a challenge, they freeze, they don't know what to do, it breaks them apart, an obstacle in the way throws them off totally. Then you have those who they say, no, we're going to face the challenge head on. And they face it, and they fight it, and they expend a tremendous amount of energy trying to fight, focusing on the challenge and fighting it. By the time they get to the other side, they have no energy to continue moving forward and growing. It takes out everything out of their life. And then you have those that look at every challenge as an opportunity. Every challenge is an opportunity that God is giving me to become something I'm not yet. Do I welcome the opportunity? Yes, it's gonna come with hard work, and I have to dig deep in with my faith and with all other strengths that I have, but it is opportunity, or am I gonna miss this opportunity? It could be a once in a lifetime opportunity. There was the shliach in Belgium, Rabbi Slavatitsky, tells the story that he once had a fellow, Daniel, who started to come to his Chabad house, and he got involved in Judaism, and he started to grow. He started to get more involved in mitzvahs, put on tefillin, Shabbos, and then all of a sudden he disappeared. He didn't see him. So finally, when he bumps into him somewhere in the streets, he says, Daniel, what's going on? How come we don't see you? So Daniel is like, just trying to get out of it somehow, but he's pushing, what's going on? You were so involved, So he says, I have a little problem, a little dilemma. He says, what's your dilemma? He says, I met a girl, and looks like we're getting engaged. He says, great, mazel tov. The problem is, she's not Jewish. So the rabbi looks at him and says, Daniel, you're so into your Judaism, like what's going on? He says, I know, but I love her, and I feel she's my bashert, and I think I'm going to go ahead with it. So the rabbi started to work on him and talk to him, but don't you know? And you know what a rabbi would regularly tell someone who's was looking to marry out? And then he got other rabbis to talk to him, and he wouldn't budge. He just wouldn't budge. So he tells him, okay, do me a favor, he tells Daniel. I want you to go to the Rebbe. In those days, the Rebbe was giving out dollars Sunday. And tell him you're marrying a non-Jewish girl. And I put it in the Rebbe's hands. Whatever happens from there, I'm never going to bother you again. If the Rebbe doesn't convince you, then I'm never going to say anything to you. So, you know, he was invested enough with the rabbi that he said, okay, I'll do it. And he goes and he waits online. And really, he was doing this for the rabbi who did so much for him, but really, he was expecting that the Rebbe is going to give him such a knock over his head. I mean, he was like, he was very uncomfortable. And he goes, it comes his turn. And those who ever went to dollars, it was a quick-moving line. So he had to quickly say, Rebbe, we gave him a dollar, Rebbe, I'm going out with a non-Jewish girl, I'm planning to marry her. So it was quiet for a moment. And then the Rebbe said, I'm jealous of you. So now he caught his attention. The Rebbe's jealous of me. He didn't even see a picture of her. Like, what's this? So the Rebbe says, you know, God puts everyone in this world. Like in Jacob's dream, we all have a ladder to climb. We start our life at the bottom of the ladder, and we climb to the top of the ladder. Hopefully by the end of our life, we've climbed to the top of the ladder. And every day that we do a mitzvah, every day that we do the right thing, we're climbing another step in the ladder and another step in the ladder. He says, sometimes God puts in front of someone a challenge, a problem, a situation, and in that problem, he's giving you the opportunity that if you face the challenge correctly and overcome, you can climb 100 stairs in one shot. He says, I go through Judaism every day. This is the way I grew up. Every day I do mitzvahs, hopefully a full day. I climb one step. I never have the opportunity to have a decision put in front of me that can allow me to climb almost to the top of the ladder in one decision. And God gave you this opportunity. If you realize that this is just a test from God, that's all it is, a test from God, and you pass it, you'll have done something I can never do. And obviously he did. So this is what we talk about. Challenge equals opportunity. This is the way Judaism wants us to see when we face challenges, and we're going to face challenges. Don't fight it. Obviously, if you can get rid of it easy, you get rid of it, but don't fight it. Work to overcome it as an opportunity to grow. Dig deeper within. And I'm sure if you all think about it, you've met people, either yourselves or others, who did that, and they're in a different place. They're different people, and I see it all the time. And obviously, just to finish this one, a big part of it is to be positive all the time. When you're positive, it's much easier to see challenges as opportunity. I can go on and on, but we'll have to go to the next. Okay, the next one, work, productivity. Now, listen, everyone has to go work. We live in the world, very few people are lucky enough or blessed, and I'm not sure if it's blessed or not blessed, to have parents who are just gonna pay their way through life. I know in California there was someone, I think, who went to sue his parents, and he was 35, because they said they didn't give him a choice to be born, and they owed him to pay for everything in his life because he never asked to be born. So there's some people who have that type of... But many people, I hear all the time, they hate going to work. Why do I have to work? When am I going to retire? I said people around me all the time, I'm going to retire at 50, at 55, and I wish I didn't have to work, and I hate waking up in the morning to work. And yet, in Judaism, work, not me work, slave work, I'm talking about the idea of work, going out to work and being productive every single day, is a value to be embraced. First of all, We are taught there are no free lunches. Actually, in the Kabbalah, there's a word called Nahama Dechesufa, shameful bread. It's shameful. And many people could relate to those who may, you know, be in a lot of handouts. It's shameful to have to just receive without putting anything in to get it. It's not a good feeling. Unfortunately, in our times, many people, there's also a tremendous amount of anxiety. People are unhappy because they say it's supposed to be easy. Why is it so hard? Why do I have to go out and work? Why do I have to go do these things? It's an unaligned idea of connecting what you have to do, what living with the work that's associated with it. But in the book of Job, Iyuv, it says, Adam le'amal yivaled. A person was born to toil. God engineered us that we're born to want to toil, to want to work, to want to be productive. Actually, the Medrash says that when Abraham was walking towards Israel, he didn't know his destination. When God said, just leave your land and go towards that direction, which was Israel. And then God showed him different lands. And he saw one land and the people were lazy and he says, I don't want to be part of that land. And then he saw a place called Sur in Israel. And he saw how people woke up in the morning. They were working hard. They were going there. They were taking care of what they needed for themselves. And they had a routine and a passion for what they were doing. And he said, this is the place I want my children. This is the land I want my children to be in. I need them to appreciate the blessing of being productive. This is why God wired us in the way that achievement is very important. In Pirkei Avot it says that though a piece of art by Picasso may be worth tens of millions or even more, but someone who can draw will be much more proud about their drawing or their painting they made. Mitisha kabam shel chaver than even something that's much more perfect and valuable that someone else made. Something that you did is a much different connection to it. Actually, they've done studies about people who win the lotteries. So all of a sudden, they come into millions of dollars, and they find, you would think that years later, these people would be taken care of for life. They find that many of them become poor again in a very quick time. Because something associated with achievement, when you work hard for your money, you have a very different relationship to your money, to what it stands for, to what it represents. And when it comes for nothing, it has no value. It means nothing. And you lose it as quick as you get it. So the idea of achievement is very much ingrained within us that we want to feel achievement. Because in life, most of life is in the journey of life. You know, mountain climbers, they spend months, years preparing to climb these big mountains. And when they get to the top, they don't spend much time. They get to the top, and as quick as they get to the top, they take a picture and they're on the way down. Now imagine you spend months to get to the top, hang around, just sit down and take it in for who knows how long, in some way comparable to the amount of time put in, but it doesn't happen that way. You get up there and you're on your way down. Because the real good feeling, accomplishment, achievement is in the journey, is the way getting there. Actually, it's anticlimactic when you get to the top. You feel empty. Many people, they have a night of awards and they go home and the next morning they feel empty again because they need to get back in the game. And this is the way Hashem wired us because we have to work. So why do we have to work? I mean, if God is, like Fiddler on the Roof said, by God, money is nothing. He can give us everything we need. Why do we really have to work? What do we gain from it? So we feel achievement. And the answer is because Hashem wants partners. He doesn't want people who are just recipients. He wants people who are invested in this world that he made. He wants us to be a partner with him in this world. And the only way we're a partner is if we roll up our sleeves and we get involved in making it happen. That's why God designed the world, that he gave us all the raw materials of what we need in life. But the last mile, in business they call it the last mile, he gave us the flour, he gave us the water, but if you want to eat, you got to make dough, and then, got to make it flour, and then dough, and then you can eat something. Everything has, we have to do something for it, because he needs us as partners. He wants us to feel as we are a part of what we are doing, and we're not just the nama d'chsufa, just the receiver, without anything invested in it. And this is something unique to human beings only. Everything in the world, they're very happy. Animals, they're created, they go through life, they survive, they know what they have to do. But we have to work. Our food is not readily available. It's not there just to make a kill. People pay a lot of money to watch animals kill in all over Africa and see how it goes. Yes, there's some strategy and planning innate in them, but for us, it's a different world. We have the ability and we have the merit to be a partner of Hashem, to put in that effort, to feel achievement, to feel it's ours. We earned it. It became ours because of something that we had done. That's the reason that actually the Rebbe discouraged retirement. Doesn't mean you have to work every day as hard as you worked maybe when you were a little younger. Actually, many scientific studies show and correlate retirement and living shorter. When people do not have something productive, real productive, not playing cards, real productive to look forward to every day, you can play cards, but I'm sure you have productive things also, right? If you don't have something productive every day to look forward to, it affects your actual desire and will to live. And as a rabbi, I see it all the time, but scientific studies show as well. Once we do that, God promises. He not just wants a partner and he leaves it up to us. He doesn't just give us the raw materials. God promises us, as it tells us, the sages tell us, Yagata umatsasa tamin, that when you work hard, you will find your success beyond your effort. God also helps us in our work and productivity. When we work hard, when we're ready to put in the effort, God brings us the success even beyond our effort. But we need to put in that effort. I think the one thing I would end off is important to always remember that work is and productivity is important, but we work to live and we don't live to work. At the end of the day, the most important thing in life is to live your personal life, your personal growth, your family, and living as a good Jew, doing what you have to do. But work itself is a positive thing that we should embrace, the idea of needing to put in the effort and show productivity and achievement. So we'll go to the next. Have a vision. In Judaism, we find how important it is that we have a vision. And this is not unique. Many of these things have trickled down into general society. You may find other people talking about it. But just to give you a little insight, if we look at the Torah, it talks about Jacob. So Yaakov is leaving his parents' home. He's going to start a life for himself. Till then, he was under the sort of the umbrella of his parents, living according to the way they set up his life. Now he's going to find himself. He's going on his own. He's going to a foreign place, Haran. He has to start a life to get married. He has to start taking care of himself. He has to start building his own future. What does the Torah tell us? Yaakov, we mentioned before, Yaakov had a dream. He falls asleep and he has a dream. And the dream was the ladder we mentioned before, connecting heaven and earth. And that's that dream. Yaakov puts together his vision, gets his vision of what he's supposed to do in life. That he's going to this foreign place, even though it's earthly, but he's going to connect earth with heaven. He's very clearly focused on what he has to do. And he lives his entire life based on that vision that he got. Same thing with his son Yosef. And the Torah tells us about his dreams. Joseph goes and he has two dreams. He tells it to his brothers. Obviously it caused a lot of family feuds. But not to get into that, Yosef had a dream. And Yosef remained very focused on his dream. He wasn't just a dreamer. In his dream, he was a vision. And he started to do things in his life to get to that vision, to be the one who will influence others around him, to be the one who will bring people together, to learn the truth, to see the truth, and to live by the truth, to live with purpose and meaning. And Yosef never took his eyes off the ball. He had that vision. He had a goal. And this is what kept him going. And this is so important for all of us. And we are blessed because our vision and our goal is Torah. Hashem gave it to us. He gives us the Torah and he says, this is the way a Jew should live. Not just because I told you you should live this way. This is the way you should live because this is the way you can be the best of you who you are. This is the way that you can live to be the utmost of what I wired you to be. The story of famous Chassid Rab Mendel Futterfass, who spent 7 years in the gulags of communist Russia, arrested by Stalin for spreading Judaism and helping Jews. And even though it was the 7 difficult years, he never wavered in his Jewish commitment. And actually, because of that, everyone there respected him. All the prisoners, fellow prisoners, many of them were gangsters and all types of political prisoners, but they all respected him very much. And in one of the gulags where he was, they gave the people there one day a year, a day off. Not that they can go out to see family, but sort of one day you don't have to work. And everyone used to do their thing. And there was one fellow amongst them who was a tightrope walker. So he was telling everyone, the day off, you see these two buildings? I'm going to put a rope between these two buildings and I'm going to walk across 2 stories high. I'm going to walk across whatever the distance was. And no one ever saw a tightrope walker. And they were like, they couldn't believe it. It's impossible. And it came the day and everyone gathered to see this guy. He got a rope and he saw Mendel. He said, Mendel, you're going to be there? He says, yeah, sure, I'll be there. Anyways, the guy goes, he has a stick, a balancing stick, and he starts walking and takes one step and everyone gasps and another step, like people with their mouths open. They never saw anything like this until he finally reached the other side and he got a big round of applause and everyone's cheering. And as he's scouring the crowd, he looks for Mendel with the beard. He was able to recognize him and he sees he's sitting there not so impressed, you know, like he's not really shouting and clapping. So it bothered him because he respected him a lot and you know, don't you want to respect me for what I can do? So afterwards, he walked over to me and he said, you weren't impressed. I mean, could you do it? So he said, listen, you know, I definitely can do it. But I got it very quickly. You had this balancing stick, and every step you took, if you were falling a little to one side, you balanced to the other side. So with practice, I can see it happening. Most people being able to master it. So he said, Mendel, you missed the whole point. He said, the only reason I can get to the other side and walk the expanse of whatever amount of feet it was is because from the moment I take the first step until I reach the other side, my eye never leaves the goal. I know my destination and I never look anywhere else. If for one moment I turn my eyes to look right or left, it's over. With all the balancing sticks and everything, it won't help anything. You have to keep your eye on your goal all the time, and then you make it across. Rav Mendel used to use this in his Farbrengens afterwards all the time to say, and that's what Judaism teaches us, that we all have to have a vision and a goal, but we don't have to make our own. We have to have personal ones within Judaism. There's Judaism is like a highway. Everyone, the many cars go on a highway. So we all have our personal input in our life based on who we are, our character. But the vision and the goal is very clear: to live like a good Jew, to follow the mitzvahs, to do what we're supposed to do. And when you have that vision and the goal is clear, then you're able to move forward. You're able to continue even though many distractions come along the way that try to throw you off. You're able to continue on. There was a Hasidic Rebbe, Rebbe Meir Pramishlan, from the early Hasidic masters, one of the great masters. So the story told how he used to go to the mikveh every morning before prayer. But in his town, there was a little hill. And the mikveh was on the other side of the hill where he lived. So you can either walk around like the Doral Trump, you have to walk around all the way, and it would take 20 minutes to go each way, or you walk over the hill, it's 5 minutes. So he would always walk over the hill to go in the morning to the mikveh before he prayed. Anyways, it came winter, and there were some young people who saw him every day go over the hill, and then it came winter, and it snowed, then the snow turned to ice, And then the youngsters were sitting there and they were saying, let's see how Rav Meir is going to make it up the hill. Maybe he's going to go around. Anyways, the next morning they get up and Rav Meir goes up the hill and he walks and walks and he doesn't fall. And the way there and the way back, he doesn't fall. So they couldn't believe it. Like, well, you have special shoes. Like, you know, today you can buy shoes that you don't slip on ice. Like, what do you have? So when he came back, they asked him, how did you do it? So he said a word in Yiddish, he said, that when you're tied above, you don't fall below. When you know your goal and you have a vision and you stay true to it, then you don't fall. When you don't, you're falling all the time. Okay, Rabbi Epstein said we have to move quickly. The next one is humility. This is a very, very powerful one. Humility is a concept that we find throughout Judaism, from the Torah and beyond. The idea is that in Judaism there's no room for an ego. Now, we all need an ego, we all have to be ambitious, but there's no room for an unhealthy ego. We have to realize that life is bigger than me. Like Hillel said, the famous saying of Hillel, if I'm not for myself, who am I? But if I'm only for myself, then what am I? Life is not just about me. You know, today we talk about the me generation. We're not just about me. I'm living for something bigger. I'm here to serve. And in actuality, ego, which leads to arrogance, leads to mediocrity. When you have a big ego, you get in your own way. You become your biggest stumbling block to real success. And God actually says, "Ein ani v'hu yecholim lader." He says, I can't live with someone who has a unhealthy ego and arrogance. I can't live with such a person, meaning there's no room for me. They take up the room, there's no room for me. And when we talk about Moses, the greatest Jew who ever lived, and we talk about his greatest quality, you know what the Torah tells us is his greatest quality? Humility. That Moses was the most humble person on the earth. Now, humility actually comes from a strong sense of self-confidence. It's not easy to be humble. It's not easy to put your ego aside. But you have to have a self. It's not a weakness. It's a strength. But it's a strength that doesn't pit you against someone else, but allows you to invite other people into your world and allow other people to invite you in their world without being threatened. Because it's not thinking less of yourself, it's thinking of yourself less. The underlying way to become humble, unfortunately, I'm going to have to move quickly through some of these, is to have gratitude. We have to have gratitude. You know, that's why in Judaism, the first thing we say every morning we wake up is, Modeh ani lefanecha, I thank you, God, that you gave me another day. When you have gratitude, then you're on the path to humility. But when you don't have gratitude, it's very hard. Because at the end of the day, none of us can do it alone. We all need others in our life to get to anything. And the truth is that even someone who becomes a leader, true leadership is about serving those who are under you, not them serving you. The most successful leaders are those who realize they're there to help those that are under them, than those people to help them. The next one is know yourself. And I'll give you two quotes from Ayom Yom. It's so important to know who you are. Unfortunately, we're bad judges of our character. And I'll tell you, I'll read Ayom Yom. It's what the Rebbe wrote in 1943, A Thought for Every Day. He says, the true way is to know one's character, truly recognizing one's own deficiencies and one's good qualities. Now, we think we know our deficiencies and we think we know our qualities. Many people are in denial of their qualities, and many people don't even know their deficiencies. They over-exaggerate. And I'll tell you something interesting. When I was in business, at some point we had a group of people invested in our company, in our startup. They were from Microsoft. And they told us something very fascinating. It always stayed with me. So they, in the early days of Microsoft, so like every company, the managers review everyone under them to see for a raise, to continue with the company, and to give them a higher position. And they came up with an idea that instead of managers judging people's how they perform, their performance, let people judge their own performance. Let's see if people judge their own performance, what it will be. And everyone told him, you're crazy. Who's not going to write, I'm the best, I'm the smartest, because of me the company is existing? So they did the first year, they gave every employee to measure their performance. And at the same time, they asked all the managers to measure their performance. And what they found was mind-boggling, that almost every employee thought of themselves worse than the managers thought of them. So we over-exaggerate our deficiencies often, and we don't realize our qualities. And it's so important that we have to know who we are. We have to be true to ourselves. We said before, humility is not about denying your ability or sometimes your ability that's unique to only yourself, like Moshe Rabbeinu Moses. You have to know who you are. And it continues, another Hayom Yom, very fascinating. It says, the individual's service must be commensurate with his character and innate qualities. There may be one who can drill pearls or polish gems, but works at baking bread, which is something that's very important. Even though it's a necessary craft and occupation, this person is considered to have committed a sin. When you don't know who you are, and you don't know your talents and your abilities, and you go down a path that's not set out for you because God gives you talents and abilities to use them, then you're hurting yourself and you're actually hurting God's world because he's counting on you to actually do your part. It's so important to know both, because then we're able to know who we are and work towards becoming a better me. And then the chances of that happening becomes much higher. And then you're satisfied, and then you feel in a good place, you feel wholesome. Number six, practice restraint. So important how to know when to say no. Many good people have a very hard time saying no. People ask you to do them a favor, you're in a workplace or a family, or you just have a hard time saying no. Opportunity comes up. And it's very hard to say no. And what happens is you start saying yes to a lot of things, then you water yourself down, and you're not available for anyone. You're not available for your children, you're not available for your spouse, you're not doing the best you can do at work, or in whatever organization you're involved. It's very important to learn how to say no. No doesn't mean you have to be mean, doesn't mean you're negative. It's just, this is not for me now. Actually, self-control and discipline is very central to Jewish life, and because of that, there are 613 mitzvot, 613 commandments, 365 of them are no's. There are more negative commandments of things we don't do than of 248 things that we do do. things that we're supposed to do. Now, usually you would think, how do we define a Jew? It's about what do you do as a Jew? It's not true. You define more by what we stay away from because we're a Jew. And actually in life you'll find that you realize a character by what they don't do but then what they participate in. Like, you know, this person would never do this. That tells us a lot about a person. Then, oh, this person does this and that. That's the way it is. So learning how to say no in actuality means you're saying yes. You're saying yes to who you really are, what you're really trying to do, what you're really trying to accomplish, to focus on the things that you need to succeed in. So it's important to learn how to say no. Not we should always say no, but you have to know. This takes, all of these things take obviously effort, takes knowledge, and it's all there in all the many teachings of Judaism that's available. I'm sure you hear it here, you'll hear it from your rabbis back home. It's so important to be able to have that within ourselves. And I see all the time that, you know, many people practice a Judaism that is all about, yes, we love the traditions. We love having a Rosh Hashanah meal and a Passover meal and the family gets together and it's beautiful. I always ask them the question, did your kids ever hear you say no to something? Because we're Jewish, we don't do this. Unfortunately, for many, they did. You know when? When they brought home a non-Jewish girl or boy at the age of 20, they said, no, you can't do that. You know what the kids say? Then wait one second. You never said no to anything about because we're Jewish. Why all of a sudden now? And then the parents come crying. What could you do, Rabbi? So you came 20 years too late. If you would have said no to something and brought your kids to synagogue, maybe even once besides Rosh Hashanah, they would have known that in Judaism, you sometimes say no to something that's exciting and interesting because you're a Jew. So how do we define ourselves to be able to succeed in any area in life? It's learning how to say no to the noise, to the things that are trying to distract us. You know, when you drive on the highway, there are many exits, there are many great attractions. But when you have a destination, you ignore all those exits and attractions because you got to get to your destination. If you don't, you'll never get there. By the time you get there, you miss the boat. The last, I think it's very important, most important, is just get started. Just begin. Most of us, I think, face a dilemma. We have great ideas. We have great dreams. In our mind, in a certain time, we make up, we get inspired, we're going to do something. And then all of a sudden, a voice comes in and starts saying, but you know, what's the chances you're going to succeed? I mean, is it ever really going to get off the ground? That little Yetzirah voice gets in and starts working on you. And even if we started, we give up very quickly. We don't put in the effort, or we don't even get started. And Judaism, which is a world of action, says just begin. Just get started. And Pirkei Avot, it says, it's not your job to finish. Don't worry about how you'll get to the end line. Just start. You have something good you're feeling, you want to do, a dream you want, just start it. Don't worry about the end, how it's going to play out. Just get started. Because the hardest is to get started. You know that a rocket ship, you ever watch NASA, when they send off a rocket ship, it's full of all types of things connected to the rocket ship. Fuel, a tremendous amount of fuel. You know that most of the fuel is burnt in the first few seconds of takeoff. Once it goes out of the atmosphere, it doesn't take that long, has very little fuel. You don't need much fuel. But to get started is the hardest resistance. And if you just push and get started on you tell you, I want to do a mitzvah, I want to do something a little more, even though I never did it until now. I want to start a business, I have an idea, I want to help other people. Just get started, because that's the only thing you really control. How things play out, this is God's world. But the only thing you can control is if I'm going to get out there and actually follow through and get started in what I'm doing. You know, King Solomon says in the Song of Songs, it says, open up to me, my sister, my bride. This is what God says to the Jewish people. So God says like this, the rabbis say, open a door as tiny as the eye of a needle, and I will open the gates wide enough. I heard Brother Fabreng, and he spoke about a needle. And I'll open your gates wide enough to let carts and horse-drawn carriages drive through. What is God telling us here? You know, the eye of a needle, the hole, is very, very, very tiny. But it's thorough. You can put something through that hole. It's small. I have a very hard time putting through a thread if I ever have to. But it'll make it. Sooner or later, I'll get it. It's a tiny, tiny hole, but it goes through and through. And God says, if you just make an opening, a true opening to me, you make a true opening for yourself in an endeavor that you want to do, I will help you reach the opening as the gates like a big hall. Without even any doors, it'll be open like you can't imagine. And this is what God tells us for everything in our life. Just make that little opening. Just start the engine. Just take the first step. And we find it throughout. God told Moses they built this very, very heavy material, beams and other things for the Mishkan. And Moses says, how do I lift it up? These beams are 15 feet tall, made out of solid wood. God said, just put your hand underneath and I'll give you the hydraulics and we'll lift up like no problem. And that's the way it is in life. When we put in, we talked about partnership, when we go and put in our effort to get started, our seriousness, not to just get it started and give up right away, to put in that little effort to get out and to start making what we want to do happen, God will be there for us to help us get to the end game. And not necessarily we'll get to the end game, but it will be ended. So number one, it's not good to overanalyze. Whenever we overanalyze anything, we never do it. You have to analyze enough to understand the hardships, the risks, what you have to do to get started, but never overanalyze what the chances are that what you're going to do is going to succeed. In the long run, as long as it makes sense, especially if it's something related to Judaism that the Torah tells us we have to do or we're supposed to do, then obviously it's doable. You know, I had a fellow in my shul who had a store, a men's store, in like the nicest street in Montreal, and the biggest day of business was Shabbos. And I started to get to know him, and I always used to tell him, say, Albert, I look forward to one day your store will be closed on Shabbos, and you'll be in shul, and you'll be celebrating with us. And, you know, he's a good Jew. Somehow it was like a seed planted in him. And he decided that one day, you know what, I'll go to synagogue, then I'll go to work afterwards. Okay. Then a little while later, I have to go to work, I have an employee. Anyway, little by little, till he closed his store. So before he closed the store, his friends would tell him, Albert, you're crazy. If you close the store on Saturday, you can close your business. What are you going to do? You know, you have a nice business. What are you going to do? He says, I didn't know what I was going to do, but I knew that if I have to live the way I feel, I can't have my store open on Shabbos. And at that time, he had he was in a wholesale business of high-end material. It was very small. It was like a little hobby almost. He closed his store, and everyone thought, cursed him out. They thought he's crazy. Why listen to this rabbi who doesn't know what he's talking about? And within 6 months, out of the blue, his other business started to take off, and he's done so well. He said, I never made in my store anything near what I make today. Because he opened the eye of a needle, God opened up. That's the way God works. He opens up for you. You know, Moses never finished his job. Moses was appointed to lead the Jews out of Egypt into Israel. He never took us into Israel. He took us to the border of Israel on the eastern side of the Jordan, and then he passed away. Now, if we ask ourselves, was Moshe an accomplished person? Did he live out his life's mission? We don't have to finish. But whatever we did was because of whatever Moses did until that point. And that's why we find, just to finish off, Choni Hamagel, a famous great rabbi, known for bringing rain to the Jews in an unusual way when they had a drought. See, he once saw a fellow planting a fig tree, an older fellow. So he says to the older fellow, he says, you know, a fig tree takes years to take root until it gives fruit. So why are you planting this fig tree? You're an older man. It's just a number of years. You're never going to see the figs grow from this tree. He says, I know, but my grandchildren will benefit from the figs from this tree. And that's the way life is. When we recognize there's a bigger, we're part of a bigger picture, we don't have to see the end of everything. We always have to be part of the process. Sometimes we have to begin, then other people, if need be. If we are blessed, we may see the end. And if not, other people will take over and they will see the fruit of everything that you had done for them. And I believe that even if we take even one or two, even one of these attitudes or characteristics, and really work in it to bring it into our life, we'll see a big difference in ourselves, in our ability to move forward in all ways, to feel wholesome, happy, to go to sleep, to feel satisfied. You know, in Judaism, we have the feeling, we're supposed to have the feeling of satisfied at the same time to want to do a little bit more. We never feel complete, but we should feel satisfied. We should feel that I put in a good day, I did good things today, I can go to sleep at night feeling I did my part. And then you wake up the next morning and say, today is a new day. Like we saw last night, the way the Rebbe said, today is a new day, and I'm going to do a little bit more, maybe even more than yesterday. And tomorrow is a new day. And if we bring in any one of these, and everyone that we add, it'll take us to places that we can never even imagine. Because within inside every one of us, we're told, is the Eretz Chefetz. Every one of us has tremendous abilities. There's greatness inside every one of us. It's different greatness. We all are going to become something different. Obviously, we're all going to be the best Jews and follow the same mitzvot. But we all have something unique that we have that we bring to the world as a person. And when we live our life to the fullest, this is when this will all come together. So I want to wish you all, we should have success, big success in all the endeavors of your life, and only blessings and good things. Thank you.
Please visit myjli.com to learn more about JLI's multiple educational offerings.